I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Alexander, let's talk about the protests going on in Iran. At first glance, as I'm digging into this story, I mean, on the surface, it reminds me a little bit of the Yellow Vests in that these are protests that are derived from a fuel price hike. Okay, we have much different scenarios in each case. But once again, you're seeing the price of fuel kind of, you know, be the impetus to get people out onto the street. Obviously, now you're going to describe what's going on in Iran and you'll break it down and analyze the situation further. But let's start from the genesis of how this started, which is this doubling and tripling of fuel prices, Alexander, and then take it into the direction of analyzing how it's really spiraling out of control at this point. At least I see it really starting to escalate.
Yes.
Very, very quickly and in a very dangerous direction. So get into it, starting from the fuel price hike.
Yeah, I mean, the essential background to this story is, of course, that Iran's economy has been under extreme stress for a long time. It was already under stress before Donald Trump reimposed across-the-board sanctions on Iran when he pulled out of the nuclear deal, joint comprehensive plan of action. And the United States has made a systematic effort to try to blockade effectively Iran's oil exports, which are its major export item. So this has put Iran's economy under some very, very severe strain. There's been a big economic contraction, and Iran already has a long history of inflation and of an economy that isn't being managed very well. So already there were social tensions within Iran, which derived from this. I mean, this kind of crisis, in a sense, has been brewing there for a long time. And the economy, the pressure on the economy created by the sanctions has made it much worse. However, I think that there are a number of other factors. Firstly, I mean, you will see all over the media, the alternative media, speculation about a foreign hand, about the US, the Israelis, the Saudis, all those people having some kind of involvement in these protests. And I'm sure there's, at some level, that is also true. But one has to also mention the extraordinarily arbitrary way in which this decision was made. Very similar in this, I think, to the point you were making about Macron in France. Macron comes along, he announces that he's going to increase gas prices, fuel prices. He's going to transfer all the money to, developing green alternatives. There's no real discussion. There's no real debate. There's no real explanation of how it's going to happen. It's all done autocratically, hitting people, a vulnerable population, which is already struggling. And we see something of the same thing happening in Iran. The government somehow announces this without any prior warning or discussion. They'd actually been telling people in the run-up to this announcement that, in fact, the economic situation in Iran was actually starting to improve because of the supposedly skillful way in which they'd coped with the sanctions and that the situation was stabilizing. So completely out of the blue, completely out of nowhere, a population which, as I said, is under stress because the economy is under stress, is presented with this decision, which is announced in this extraordinary way. So not surprisingly, a lot of people are very angry, and for that reason, they are protesting. Now, it is still one of the lowest oil and gas prices in the world, apparently, in Iran. Iran, obviously, being a major oil and gas producer, is able to provide very low energy prices. But at a time when people in Iran feel under so much pressure to be presented with something like this, coming out of nowhere, obviously it's created a massive explosion of anger. And we see protests all over Iran. Now, the exact scale of these protests, always very difficult to assess in a country like Iran. The Iranians will play them down, though they admit they're taking place. Other observers, much more hostile to the Iranian government, will try to talk them up. The Iranian government has a very sophisticated internal security system. I think it will succeed in riding out these protests, especially as it seems to be largely united in implementing this change. But of course, this is going to anger many people, and it's going to leave a legacy of very bad feeling in Iran, even if, as I expect, the government in the end rides this thing out.
Yeah, I've heard reports anywhere from 100 people killed to 1,000 arrested. Like you said, it's hard to get a feel as to what's going on. But I have a couple of questions for you. The first one, really quickly, do you think it's the right strategy for the government in Iran to have shut down all the information sources, the social medias, the internet, and all that stuff? Do you think that was the right move in this type of scenario?
I'm going to say something that's controversial and which to a great extent goes against my inner feelings. But I think looking at the situation in Iran, the answer to your question is yes. I say that because on balance, in most situations like this, I am all in favor of having protests reported properly and fairly and publicly, with people encouraged to talk about their grievances, to protest about them, to do so democratically, and to have this thing played out properly throughout the proper democratic and political processes, which to some extent, to be fair, do exist in Iran. Iran does have a genuine civil society. It does have meaningful elections. They're not perhaps as free as they are in some countries. They do operate in a constrained way, but there is a greater degree of openness in Iran than you will tend to find in this region. I'm afraid in this case, I think that's probably very difficult to do. And that is because of the situation Iran is in. Iran is not in a position where it can argue out its differences by itself. Iran is a country which is under extraordinary siege by the United States, by Israel, by Saudi Arabia, by Britain, by other countries. We know the degree to which those countries are extremely skilled in manipulating social media, in controlling public debate through social media, which to a great extent they still control. So I think I can understand why the Iranian authorities, faced by this situation, have decided that a information blackout is unavoidable. It does carry its own dangers because, of course, it means that rumors spread. And, of course, it also means that people finding it difficult to express their views publicly will become even more angry and even more likely to turn to violence. So, you know, I'm not saying this with any great, conviction or happiness, but I can understand why the Iranian authorities are doing it. And I'm on balance. I think if they're going to control this thing, it's probably the right thing to do. Once they've got on top of it, if they do, they need to ask themselves some very serious questions. Because, as I said, the arbitrary way in which this thing was announced was a disaster. And it made what was always going to be an unpopular decision. It in effect, incited the protests which the government would have probably wanted to avoid.
Yeah, I brought up in the beginning of the video, Alexander, the comparison to France and Macron's decision. Yeah. Understanding that you're dealing with two very, very different scenarios and two very different countries. But my main point in all of this is, and I think you confirmed it, is in both scenarios, you had what I would call an own goal. In other words, they didn't have to, you know, make these decisions in the manner that they made. Or maybe they had to implement these types of reforms, these types of changes. Yes. But like you said, they could have informed the public in a much better way. Mm-hmm. And the other big main difference between France and Iran is that France was very, they had a very friendly media to cover for Macron, where in Iran, you're going to have the exact opposite. They're going to be gunning to bring down the government in Iran. And so my point on all this is that Iran can't absorb 12, 14, 18 weeks of this like France can, because France had a lot of help from a complicit media, from a lot of cover-ups, you know, suppressing the stories and aiding Macron so that he could deal with the yellow vest over a long period of time. Iran doesn't have that type of cushion or that type of, they've got the exact opposite. They're going to have everyone now amplifying everything. This was a very, very poor decision.
I think it's a terrible decision. I think it's a terrible decision.
They can't afford to make mistakes like this at this point in time. They just can't afford it. Otherwise, my opinion is that government will fall if they make these types of decisions.
I completely agree. I mean, first of all, you're absolutely right. They don't have the cushion that France does. I mean, France is a much, much more sophisticated country. And as you absolutely rightly say, Macron doesn't need to impose the kind of across-the-board blackout on the yellow vest protests, because the media does it for him. In Iran, it's completely different. I mean, the media, the international media, as you rightly say, is gunning for them. But putting all that aside, Iran cannot afford these kind of mistakes. And this was a terrible mistake. It was extraordinarily foolish thing to do. They didn't need to do it, in my opinion. I mean, this was a situation where they could have ridden out this pressure. They didn't have to announce this kind of rise, this kind of energy price increase. And they certainly shouldn't have done it in this way. If they were going to do it, they needed to prepare the population for it much better than they did. I mean, telling everybody that the situation is improving when it's actually getting worse, and then hitting them with something like this, and doing so without any preparation and overnight, well, that is a disastrously stupid thing to do, in my opinion. But can I just say, the Iranian government is a bit like this. In some things, like its conduct of its foreign policy, its intelligence operations, even its military things, it's extremely well organized. I mean, they are extremely skilled at running things all over the Middle East. In fact, they're the past masters at it. But when it comes to managing their economy and in making these sort of decisions, they're terrible. They are completely at sea. They make mistake after mistake after mistake. Iran, which potentially has a very strong economy, it's always been run incredibly badly. And it has been run badly for a very, very long time.
Why is that? Why?
Well, I suspect, I'm going to be a bit controversial here, but I suspect it's partly a consequence of this very strange political system which they have in Iran, which is not an entirely full democracy. And at the same time, it's not an entirely proper authoritarian state either. So the result is that governance is very weak internally. You don't have a strong government, such as you get in both democratic countries and some very authoritarian ones, which is able to implement and enforce decisions and pursue policies and strategies over a very long time. It tends to be, Iranian governments tend to be extremely reactive and very, very susceptible to populist decisions. So, you know, it's a fault of a system, of a hybrid political system that is not really very well put together. At least that's my view.
It sounds like this is a system that could be easily exploited by the U.S. and the deep state in order to initiate a regime change. I mean, listening to you, that's the sense that I get, because they don't care what Iran does in its diplomatic circles externally and all that. Fine, they want the change to come. They would prefer the change to come from the inside rather than the outside. Yeah. And what you're describing is that, you know, if any type of change was to happen in Iran, it would happen at the weak point, which is from the inside.
Well, indeed, sir. I mean, it's not North Korea, where, as I said, which is a tough dictatorship where the regime is in complete control and you can throw whatever sanctions you want at it, and that's not going to change anything. And I'm going to say it bluntly, it's not Russia either, where the Russian political system is quite democratic and open in a way that the Iranian is not. And that means that they can also talk things through and adjust to things and build up a proper popular consensus. Iran isn't like that. It is a much weaker power than those two countries are in facing these sort of challenges. And, you know, I think the Iranians need to look at this and they need to think through more carefully this very kind of hybrid structure that they have and work out whether ultimately it is one that works best for them. And I agree. I think, you know, that's their decision. That's, by the way, I want to make that very clear, that it is for the Iranians themselves to work that out. But in the meantime, undoubtedly, it does make Iran much more vulnerable to the kind of pressure politics. I read a Russian official who once said that the US is very skilled in discovering pressure points within a particular society and then putting its finger on them and, you know, pressing them. And I'm afraid Iran is like that. It does have lots of pressure points. So there's lots of things that the United States can do. At the same time, it's a very patriotic country. Iranian people are very patriotic. And it has to be said that it's also a country where this hybrid political system does have a certain legitimacy. It was created from a revolution which took place in 1979, and it is validated by people's religious feelings. So it does have that kind of resilience. So we shouldn't underestimate it either. But it's not, you know, as strong a system as it could be, because, as I said, it is this odd hybrid.
Okay, and finally, Alexander, you mentioned Russia. Let's bring in China as well. What are Russia and China, who I would say are Iran's most important allies at this very moment, what are they saying as they're looking on?
Well, I think they're not happy because, of course, they want to see a stable situation in Iran. And I think if there was a real revolution in Iran, if the government was in serious difficulty, they would be extremely concerned. I think at the moment, the telephone lines from Moscow and Beijing are ringing and they're talking to people in Tehran, and I'm sure they're getting all kinds of assurances that the situation in Iran is under control. But I think also the Russians, especially the Russians, who are perhaps even more heavily involved in Iran than the Chinese are, will be looking at the situation in Iran, and they will be saying to themselves that, you know, if the Iranians are really going to see this thing through, if they're going to battle through and win out in the face of this sanctions war that they're facing, they need to get their house in order, both politically and economically, much more than they have up to now. And that might mean that the Russians will have to feel at some level that they'll have to start giving Iran advice, which generally they don't terribly like to do.
Right. All right. Alexander Mercuris, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant. Thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Smash that like. Hit that notifications bell. Also, check us out on iTunes and on SoundCloud to get an audio copy of this show as well. You'll find links in the description box down below. Please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. You will find links to those platforms as well in the description box down below, and your donation really helps us out a whole lot. And check us out on BitChute, where we post all our videos, and on Durant Video, which is in beta mode but coming along nicely, where we also post all our videos, and on Telegram, where we post everything, our videos and stuff about merchandise, our shop, and discounts, and all kinds of things related to the Durand community. Alexander, discounts, merchandise, Telegram.
Indeed. Indeed, our merchandise is going from strength to strength, but so can I just say our platforms. We're very excited about these platforms. We think they will enormously enlarge our service and make it even better than it is already. So, you know, we'll go from excellent to simply outstanding. And that's what our platforms are going to enable us to do. So we strongly urge you, I mean, I strongly urge you to look us up there and to support us on those platforms. And we've got all kinds of projects and plans for all kinds of things we're going to start doing on those platforms, which we haven't been doing up to now because we felt all kinds of constraints and pressures which have prevented us from doing them. So keep an eye on what we're doing on those platforms. But of course, I couldn't not mention our shop, our amazing shop with its wonderful products, which, as I said, Alex correctly says, you can find all their details on Telegram and all the discounts that are available there. You can see my marvelous Durand mug, which I would not be without on a cold day like this, drinking Queen Anne tea from Fortnum and Mason's in this mug, perfectly made for it, 15-ounce mug, beautiful porcelain body, keeps it marvelously warm. You can see how easily I'm holding it, how it's almost full, by the way. It's not spilling because it's so steady in my hand. It's the perfect mug for this sort of thing. It's the perfect mug for drinking beer, for hot chocolate, as my wife likes to drink hot chocolate, for coffee, which she also drinks in huge quantities, and all sorts of other great things if you want to drink from them. And you can see that he's got the emblem there of the Russian Federation, which is the double-headed eagle of Russia, which you will find also on the Kremlin's porcelain service. Only I reckon it's probably not as good as ours is. And it's not just magic mugs we have. We've got phenomenal t-shirts like the one I'm wearing, long-sleeved t-shirt because this is a cold day. But we've also got short-sleeved t-shirts. We've got V-neck shirts. We've got our truly amazing and wonderful polo shirts, which I absolutely love wearing, which feel so great and so comfortable and which look so smart. We've also got hoodies, absolutely essential in cold weather, like that kind we have in London. We've got hats, we've got stickers, we've got all sorts of great things. So what's holding you back? Help the Durand, help yourself, go to our shop. Alex will tell you how to do it.
Just look for the link in the description box down below, the durandshop.com. Alexander Mercure is editor-in-chief of the Durand. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.